1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Red Beard, and today in the studio, it's the conclusion of our examination of David Bowie's highly influential American years between 1974 and 78, culminating in the release of Station to Station.
But I didn't quite know what I was going to do. I mean, I really sort of painted myself into a corner by finishing Ziggy and the Spiders. And in a way, that is also a freedom, because it meant that I had everything and nothing all at the same time. This is David Bowie in the studio for the making of Station to Station.
In 1972, David Bowie had taken his band of Brits, the Spiders, from their London home and set up a second base camp in New York City. But by 1974, Bowie had completely replaced them. With his 10th album, Station to Station, in 1976, no longer infatuated by American soul music as it evolved into disco, but not yet embarked on his pioneering electronica work in Berlin, David Bowie continued in what was to become a hallmark of his career over four decades. He adopted a dramatic new look, an intriguing new stage persona as the Thin White Duke, and he assembled a white-hot live band of decidedly Americans this time, including bandleader Carlos Alomar on guitar and lead guitarist Earl Slick. Following his 1975 Philly soul-centric Young Americans album, David Bowie completed filming his first foray into acting in Los Angeles in The Man Who Fell to Earth, before commencing recording there on his 10th album in barely 6 years, called Station to Station. Almost a quarter century had passed when David and I sat down to explore this ever-evolving period in his long, illustrious career.
Usually 25 years on after an album like Station to Station, which followed up Young Americans. Mm. I was shocked to see the biggest disparity in critical that album, depending on whose work you read. I'm talking about contemporary work. Depending on whose work you read, Station to Station was either the best album you've ever done prior to these last couple of albums, or totally dismissed as your weakest effort. Now, I don't remember seeing the disparity of critical opinion this far down the road, when people have had this much time to digest, analyze, and see, you know, the impact. I doubt that you care, but there seems to be this dichotomy of opinion about that particular work.
I pick up my feedback about how my work is being regarded from musicians, because the way you change the music is by changing the music.
Very good.
And it's those who make music who will actually take your history onwards.
Very good.
And I find that Station to Station, Scary Monsters, Low, from those early albums, are probably the ones that really counted among the newer bands and the newer artists. Mm-hmm. And so I see it in that way as being an album that did create some kind of change.
Life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. There's my baby lost, that's all. Hopes are big and you save a little
soul.
Last night they loved you, opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
Didn't walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine. Back down where you once belonged, in the back of a dream car 20 foot long. Don't cry, my sweet, don't break my heart. Doing all right, but we gotta get smart. Wish upon day, I believe, oh Lord, I believe all the way.
Run for the shadows, run for the shadows, run for the shadows in these golden years.
There's my baby lost, that's all. Let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel, come with the baby. Run for the shadows, run for the shadows, run for the shadows in these golden years.
I'll stick with you, baby, for a thousand years. Nothing's gonna touch you in these golden years.
Go.
I can't afford to read critical opinion because it's always wrong. Or no, frankly, it really is because they're rarely in tune with what musicians think.
Isn't that strange?
They're rarely in tune with what musicians think.
Makes you wonder why they exist.
No. I think it's interesting to have that kind of forum, but not. It's more interesting for I think other critics to read. I think that for musicians, we tend to be fairly curious. No, fairly curious as to what our fellow and contemporaries think on those kinds of issues. And I think that, for instance, Low, at the time, was not thought of as much of an album when it was released, both in England and in America. At the same period, there were a lot of musicians around who really, really liked that album. And I knew then how important it was, only because of what other musicians were saying about it. And it indeed, those other musicians were right, that it, in fact, it's, I think, probably regarded as one of the so-called important albums that I put out. But I knew at the time, I knew because I knew the feedback I was getting from other musicians and how do we do this and what do we do to make that sound and all that. And over the 80s and even into the 90s, you still hear inflections of Low and that period of album, Low and Heroes and Lodger and up to through Scary Monsters. Mm-hmm. There's a certain kind of block that created a kind of a music, which I don't think was actually seen at the time by written opinion.
He's got no channels.
then send back my dream dust, baby. She's my main feature, my TVC-15. It just is back on blinking. So hologram it, oh my TVC-15. One of these nights I may just jump down that rainbow way. Be with my baby, then we'll spend some time together. So hologram it, oh my TVC-15.
According to the late David Bowie, the song TVC-15 from Station to Station was about the relationship between a girl and her TV set. It's just part of the impressive, comprehensive Who Can I Be Now 12 CD brick or 13 LP box set containing the unreleased Young Americans prequel called The Gouster, available now at Amazon. Next, David Bowie confesses a revelation about his chameleon-like personas in the 70s. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with the late David Bowie, for the album ranked number 315 by Rolling Stone magazine on their all-time list, Station to Station.
This is David Bowie in the studio for the making of Station to Station.
By the 1976 release of Station to Station, David Bowie's 10th album already, he had acquired the reputation of the boldest rocker extant, constantly challenging the accepted societal norms. With his Ziggy Stardust character, was he a man? Was he a woman? Was he from planet Earth? With Young Americans, the album which preceded Station to Station, was he black? And now with the gaunt, thin white Duke with the perpetual moon tan, was he rejecting all of that American influence for a European continental approach? David Bowie confessed in the studio that it all emanated from a surprising dilemma.
Partially because I had huge unease with myself as a performer. I never believed that I was much of a performer or a singer or anything in that way. And I had to do these songs out of necessity. That's kind of what started it, in a way. When I was in my late teens, it was my considered opinion that what I would inevitably end up doing was writing a kind of musical. I thought that's what I was going to be doing. I thought I would be writing musicals and other people would sing them. But nobody sang my songs. So it really, I had to go out and sing them. And the best way of me doing them is kind of thinking, I guess, well, if this were a musical, it would be kind of like this. And then it was easier, much easier for me to be able to do the songs in character of something that I'd written and keep that in the front of my mind. It got easier over the years, and I guess somewhere in the 80s I found my own voice, so to speak. Which seems to be about half a dozen voices, but as I do kind of move up and vacillate from style to style, if it suits a particular song. You know, I still think of myself as merely another instrument to sort of, you know, express these pieces of music. It's not me interpreting songs in a way. It's a strange dichotomy. I really am quite still as confused about what I am as a performer as I ever was. I'm certain of myself as a writer, but as a performer, I don't know. I haven't got a clue. We'll be right back.
something, but what I never say, you stay this time. I really meant to so bad this time. Cause you can never really tell when somebody wants something you want to.
Guitar workout from Carlos Alomar and Earl Slick on guitars on the song Stay from David Bowie's Station to Station.
Let's talk about art and commerce. Give me your historical and cultural take, if you will, on how the UK and Western Europe and Japan have approached rock music in TV adverts versus...
Isn't that incredible?
All I know is that 10 years ago, if you wanted to get into a really lively debate with your peers, your American musician peers, just bring up the subject of whether or not it's okay to use Beatle music to sell Nike running shoes.
Yeah.
Or Rebel Rebel to sell cars.
Absolutely.
Something has changed. So first, let's talk...
Drastically, yeah. As much as we're loath to admit it, especially we in... The rock writing area, I think, is that rock music has lost its currency as a subversive and revolutionary force. I mean, that was bound to happen because it happens with every art form.
That's interesting.
And I think when it merely becomes a conveyance for information, the conveyance itself is up for grabs because it's not exactly what it is, isn't it? It could be put out to pasture now because it actually has done. If you think in terms of art, if you only think of art in terms of its revolutionary clout, its insistence on changing the establishment perspective, its way of unifying, creating solidarity within certain groups of people, then white rock has definitely come to a full stop in terms of being a conveyance of revolution. It's now merely a conveyance of information, which is fine, but it does mean that it no longer tweaks the ear the way that it used to. It doesn't make you feel as though you are us and them anymore. In fact, it's gone through its usual... It's been pulled into the tyranny of the mainstream, and it now just becomes a way that we... express our society in a very general, almost kind of conservative fashion. So it was bound to then get picked up by the advertising companies as being representative of society and, in fact, the establishment, and a way that we all think.
It's interesting.
It's very important for an art form to be the way that only a certain group of people think. That's when it's still an incendiary device. But when it just becomes the way that we all think, it's popular music. We all love popular music. Access to it is so easy. It's everywhere. It's wall to wall. It wasn't this. I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, I remember having to tune into the American Forces Network to hear any real kind of rock music at all, especially if I wanted to hear any soul or rhythm and blues. This was just nothing anywhere in Britain, unless you go to record shops that bought 45s off GIs and things like that and pick them up that way. So it's the pure accessibility of it as well. And I guess that would lead me to say that the internet, in fact, has taken the position that popular music used to have in that way. It is the revolutionary force now because it's unbridled, it's chaotic, almost anarchistic. You can't control it, however much people would like to. There is really no way of controlling the internet. There may be some very big sites up there, but there's a lot of real renegade, nutcase cowboy sites up there as well. So it really is the arena for expressing new ideas in a new way. And that's really, I think, what it's about, expressing new ideas in a new way. There are new ideas out there, although you have to look at a lot of pop music and see how formulaic it has become in certain areas. And because of the commercial aspects of that kind of formula have held the corporations into not nurturing artists anymore. They don't nurture talent. It's smack the big one fast because the artists are dispensable, but it's the formula that they hold on to.
That's not new.
Certainly not new.
Even when you started, that was really the rule of thumb.
Not in quite such a colossal way as it. Okay. It's virtually the only way that the record industry is run these days.
I think you touched on the fact that the revolutionary aspect seems to make it tamer.
Mm.
Why was that never a factor in, let's say, Japan? Why was it just accepted for your music, Eric Clapton's music, Sting's music, to be used in Japan?
Firstly, in Japan, there is no form of rebellionism. It just doesn't exist in quite the same
society,
way. It's not that so much, but the loyalty to first family and then to corporation. There was never really a particular generation in Japan that revolted against their peers and revolted against their parents. Mm. There was no sense of revolution. Okay. There was always a national pull to go somewhere altogether. And you find even on the Saturday afternoons and Sunday afternoons in Tokyo, where you would go and see the crazies on the streets playing the music as greasers and ton-up guys or mad punks or whatever, they'd all close down at like 5 o'clock and get off their little stages and just all go home and have tea with their mother and father. And there was a real sense of togetherness. There wasn't the rebel thing. So popular music wasn't necessarily seen as a form of rebelling against anything.
Okay.
It was an exciting thing, yes. So it really was perceived in a very different way from the way it's perceived in the West. It's interesting what the Reagan and Thatcher years did to our nations in that way. A certain kind of acceptability for acquiring things and living it's left a yuppie disposition over everybody and everything. I think there's a very strong flavor of that with Britpop. I think you do see it with I've Made Good kind of thing is really popular in Britain. Is a working class lad who's made a lot of money. It's kind of, that's cool. It really is, it's very acceptable to kind of be a success in that kind of, you know.
It's a very American sentiment, actually.
You guys won then, didn't you?
I didn't, I won't go there. I'll just say that it doesn't sound foreign to us. You know, we're raised with that.
I think, you know, there's an incredible, an incredible need for things to be looked at as though that there really is some kind of narrative form that we can all follow, and that there's some kind of successful resolve at the end of it. I look at the popularity of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, or it's just incredible that that thing has the highest rating of any show in America, just about.
And Tuesday night,
yeah,
you were the correct answer.
I know. I saw it.
So we were both watching.
Because like everybody else, I was watching it too. Because there's a bunch of nice people living out an American dream. And I think that, you know, that may have an awful lot to do with it. That there's some kind of nostalgia or kind of need to have the safety and the certainty of the idea that was put forward in the 50s that, you know, everything can be okay and we're all going to have a great time and be successful. And I think that really, because the more kind of chaotic and fragmented the actual foundations of our society becomes, I think the more that in fact that we'll see that kind of zeitgeist presented, is that it's okay, because really it's all going to turn back to this one day. But it ain't, is it?
Love me, love me, love me, love me, say you do. Let me fly away with you. Satisfy this hungriness. Let the wind blow through your heart. Oh, wild is the wind. Wild is the wind. The sound of mandolins. You kiss me with your kiss, my life begins. Your spring. Spring to me, all things to me.
my darling, cling to me. Oh, we're like creatures in the wind, and wild is the wind, wild.
Easily as soulful as anything on the Young Americans album, but without the awkward affectation, Wild is the Wind comes from the album Station to Station, remarkably just one of the five original albums by David Bowie on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 of all time. Still to come, Bowie transforms the internet in much the same way as he did rock music. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and online 24/7 at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with the late David Bowie, for the American years, 1974 through 78, collected in Who Can I Be Now? Part 2.
Thanks for rejoining us in the studio. David Bowie here with Redbeard.
It was such an honor to have several conversations with David. I miss him very much. But his enthusiasms for creative communication live on today, not just in music, but as powerful internet pioneer in the late 90s.
You also are doing these independent service providers, ISPs,
yeah.
on the internet for certain companies. And the New York Yankees?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I think my connection with baseball is fairly legendary. I mean,
of course.
Ask me who won the World Series.
I was about to say, however, but I bet you know the answer to this. In the most American of sports, baseball, yeah. during the World Series,
yeah.
guess what song they used as they were on network television to exemplify being the best, winning the series. They played Heroes.
Yes, that's right.
I thought it was yeah. exceedingly hip.
That was
I thought it was exceedingly
talk
cool.
Talk about fortuitous. Yeah, that was rather lovely. I actually do have a connection with baseball, however tenuous. When I was a kid, the area that I lived in, there were a whole bunch of Canadians who were expats. They'd stayed in England after the war. And they had married English girls and raised families and whatever, and virtually become some British. But they did keep up their baseball interest. And originating mainly from Toronto, they called themselves the Dulwich Blue Jays. And so I used to go to school with a kid of one of these guys, and he would play with his dad on the weekends. And he took me along, and I used to play in the, of course, I was put in the outfield. I think they found a special position for me. Seem to be four of us out there, if I remember right. But so I know my way around the mitt. I actually enjoyed it very much. It was a fun game.
That's good.
But I must say that is 14 years old, I think, is the last time I actually played baseball.
There you go. Well, you got your song on the World Series. I thought it was pretty cool.
But we started doing that. Well, I mean, I formed two things in 97. One was the BowieNet site, but that really was, I guess more than anything else, a flagship for the company called UltraStar, which is a company that does create ISPs, and I'm a founder of that company as well. And the idea was to, because we wanted every aspect of BowieNet.com to be as innovative as possible, and I think we probably created a really quite exciting artist site there with that. And I think because of the knowledge of that got around the internet so fast, a lot of people were bringing their programs to us before anybody else, because it was almost coming to a point where you had to be seen to be part of it if you had something new in the music area. So it continued to be cutting edge, and it still is to this day. But that indeed has encouraged other people to come to the mother company, Ultrastar, to start creating sites. That's how the Yankees came to us, and a number of others, Baltimore Orioles. So we're giving this tradition of baseball teams.
Wow.
We also have some football teams coming up and a few universities and whatever. And surprisingly enough, because it's kind of actually works in a smaller way than most ambitions on the internet, they are small, fairly intimate ISPs compared to a Netscape or something huge. We are still about the only people on the internet doing this kind of work, which is quite amazing. And if we're not, we're definitely the best known. So it's really becoming quite a player. The company is doing very well indeed. Something that I'm extremely hands-on with. I mean, I dominate the site. It's all, everything about it is the way I want it to be. All the areas in it are the areas I want. I contribute to it all the time. I create the journals for it. I do book lists of things that I've read. I do. I also brought the Sensation exhibition to it for free. I mean, that's a free site that's within the BowieNet site. I've got a number of other art exhibitions that I'm running within it. I'm also starting to pull in on other artists and to introduce their work to other people, having them come on and do chat rooms. It really is becoming a much wider forum than when it first started, which has always been my idea, to expand it so that it represents all the arts, not just kind of the stuff that I do. Plus, we don't sell anything. We are not a sell site.
You don't sell.
You cannot buy a T-shirt on my site.
Really?
It's got nothing to do with sales.
Once
it's about
again.
Trying to create an interesting, a new kind of community where the community revolves around a particular set of interests. And that's the idea of the ISPs, is to create a force that have like-minded ideas about something. That's the thing I found lacking when I was going to the more generic kind of ISPs, when I got onto the internet, it's like, I wish there was something that really represented the kind of stuff I like. And I thought, well, if I think like that, then a lot of other people must think like that. Well, let's try it with a one thing specific site. And as I know me best, it's to me. Let's see what happens. And it became a great success. There are a lot of other sites that deal with merchandise and selling and buying albums and all that. And I don't want to touch that because I don't think that's what I do best. What I do best is trying to create new ways of expressing things and trying to find new ways of combining information.
It now has possibilities far beyond going down to the record shop like we used to and buying the latest record of so-and-so.
I absolutely. It's my approach to how I think I can make a change in the way that music is conveyed to us. It's part of how we embrace the internet as a way of making a fairly constructive exercise and not just a big shop, you know? It doesn't have to be a big shop. So much talk has gone about how music will eventually all be on the internet. Well, yes, but in what form? You know, I think it can't just become a replacement for the retail shop on the street, you know, because the retail on the shop on the street is actually a really good place. There's a lot of community aspects to that. A lot of kids go into those shops just because they want to be with some people.
Have for years.
Absolutely, and that will never be replaced. But what will happen is that if the internet becomes very interesting in the way that it allows you access to music and the artists and what they think and what they do. I mean, we have chat rooms that I am in all the time on my site, at least 2-3 times a week. And I go in and I get feedback from everyone, and they're quite hostile as well. It's not a big pally. I mean, we're not talking the Osmonds. You know, it's not a fan club kind of thing. It's not like the old-fashioned idea of a fan club. This really is a sense of a virtual community. Of people that really have information that goes backwards and forwards between the artist and themselves. And that really is a totally new kind of thing. I've found very few sites where the artists are actually involved, where they'll go on and chat with the users of the site. What will happen on the streets is that the retail system and the shop system will stay in place, but the shops that they're indifferent to you, the shops where there are lines all the time to the counter, where the guy behind the counter couldn't give a damn if you get your record or don't get your record, where it's never in stock, where they're not listening to you, those shops will fade out. Because the good shops that really want to give you service, they will stay, and it will, the whole system will be embraced with the internet as well. And selling will take place via the internet, but with retailers. And retailers more and more will be going online so that you get dual kind of service. You get a shop service and internet service as well. For maybe kids who can't get to the next big city, they'll be able to go online to their retailer and get it straight from them that way. It won't replace retail.
Thank you.
blazing live version of Stay from David Bowie live at the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island in March 1976, included on Who Can I Be Now, the 12-CD brick or 13-LP box set containing the unreleased album The Gouster, available now from Amazon. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, the late David Bowie. He is sorely missed. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net.